Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the CHGO Cubs podcast presented by PointsBet. Use code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Hello, everyone. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan, and we are coming to you on Sunday, July 3rd. The Cubs and Red Sox just finished wrapping up a three-game series at beautiful, historic Wrigley Field. And the Cubs take two of three, Brendan. They win the first two in this series, and it did feel like there might have been a little magic on Sunday for them to complete that sweep, it was not to be in extra innings.
Not to be. The bullpen, though, Corey, we'll get into it, but the bullpen, pretty impressive series against a formidable offense in Boston, so that was fun to see. And despite the sour ending to that game, pretty productive series for the most part.
So we will break all of that down, talk about all of what we saw this weekend with the Boston Red Sox, and then we will get you set up for this next week at the end of the episode here. And we've got some, potential, it's kind of been the case for a little while now, Brendan, with the roster that some guys are going to be coming back, and we're looking forward to that. And we do have a couple of notes on that front that, I suppose we can just start with briefly. Seiya Suzuki departing Iowa on Sunday. So he is headed back to Chicago. The latest, as we're recording this, just after the game, was that it's possible he gets activated as soon as Monday. But either way, it's going to be in the very near future. Drew Smyly beginning a rehab stint with South Bend. That is high A. on Monday, and Marcus Stroman is pitching for the Iowa Cubs here on Sunday. I think he's scheduled to go three innings. So that is a lot of good news, Brendan.
Yeah, a lot of good news. Get the guys back. It will be fun to see how that outfield situation works out, especially with Morel having a recent hot stretch here, how Ross uses him. But I'm looking forward to get Seiya back. I'm looking forward to get these guys healthy, Corey. We got to see what they can provide to get a good idea, especially before this trade deadline comes up.
Yeah, particularly for Drew Smyly, it would be very convenient for the Cubs if he could get back in there and have a couple of...
There's still time, He just needs, like you said, a couple, and then that's maybe necessary.
Yeah, because, he has that... he has a pedigree at the MLB level.
He does.
He's dealt with a lot of injuries, but he's the type of guy that if they can just get him back out there and looking healthy, a team looking to add starting depth, long relief depth, whatever it is, they know what they're getting there with Drew Smyly. They just need to know he's healthy. So that timing is working nicely. Obviously, you want Marcus Stroman to get back so he can get back to pitching at the top of the Cubs rotation, like has been the plan all season. And we've talked about this, you and I and Cody, Luke, Ryan, everybody. Like, I just miss watching Seiya play. He was, at the beginning of the year, sort of one of the lone bright spots to start the year before Nico Horner had gotten hot and Ian Happ had started putting this together and prior to Christopher Morel even coming up. And as we've talked about, his development as a rookie, not in terms of his baseball career, obviously, but in the majors, stunted with this injury. So looking forward to seeing him come back and seeing him get back to, putting in that work to make the necessary adjustments here in his first year.
And it seems as if he was going through those adjustments before he hurt that finger. The strikeouts were going up, and not because he was whiffing more, just because he was taking all those pitches. So he just needs to get comfortable, right? So get him back right away. Hopefully when he does come back, it's not going to be a gradual increase in playing time. My hope is if he's back on Monday, He's in there every single day, 4 to 5 plate appearances every single day.
And I think you touched on it, Brendan. A particular thing to keep an eye on with Seiya, especially as someone adjusting to life in America, being in the majors, et cetera, he, you've seen it a lot where he has gotten unfairly penalized by how good his eye is and how bad umpires are generally. And that's one of the big things that, you know, when you're talking about him playing every day, that's really the experience that you want him to get. You don't want him expanding the strike zone on pitches that he thinks are balls. You want that patience, but even just learning to accept more called strikeouts, like that's an adjustment, right? Like, and you want him out there, and however the Cubs want to handle that, whether it is, you know, maybe being a little more aggressive on pitches that are borderline, things like that, you need that time, and injuries take away that time.
Yeah, and you look at his overall hit portfolio this year. The encouraging part about Seiya is even though he's kind of getting screwed on bad calls by umpires, it hasn't affected where he hits the ball. It's not as if he's like swinging way outside the zone and pulling an extraordinary amount of pitches. His spray chart is basically pretty evenly dispersed, left field, center field, right field. And one of the encouraging aspects about Seiya is he has also gotten kind of screwed by the ballparks he's played in, because his expected home runs is almost 2 more than his actual total. For example, if he were playing in on the south side in with the White Sox, he would have had 7 home runs. If he were playing in Washington, 7 home runs. Even, Corey, in Milwaukee, if he were in Milwaukee, he would have 9 home runs by now. So I'm hoping just everything stays constant, because I feel as if he does stay constant and a little bit of a tweak on some certain pitches, I think the numbers are just going to go right back up to where we saw them. Not maybe like MVP-type level numbers in April, but way above league average numbers.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. Good news that the Cubs are getting healthier. There, you know, some miscellaneous notes on guys like Schwindel, Madrigal, etc. You know, they're working their way back, taking BP and stuff like that, but nothing that is as finalized or in motion as Suzuki, Smiley, and Marcus Stroman. So that is the story there. Let's just run through these 3 games, these box scores real quick to set the table. Hopefully you are listening to this, enjoying your holiday weekend, however you are celebrating it. Hopefully you have a nice long weekend here. If you are working on Monday, we are here for you to give you a little Cubs to talk about. But on Friday, it was a 6-5 comeback win for the Chicago Cubs. They trailed this game 4-0 in the top of the 2nd inning. It was a rough start for Adrian Sampson, but he did settle in enough to give the Cubs 5 1/3. He gives up 8 hits, 5 runs, 4 of them earned, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. So overall, you know, in a little, you know, small body of work for Sampson, a pretty nice job that he's done coming up here and kind of just being tossed into, you know, emergency relief, starting, whatever the Cubs are asking of him. So a nice job from Adrian Sampson for sure. The Cubs getting their runs in this one after they trailed 4-0. Nelson Velasquez with an RBI triple. Christopher Morel brought in one with a ground out, and then Rafael Ortega was walked with the bases loaded. That made it 4-3 in the 5th. Top of the 6th, the Red Sox added 1, but in the bottom of the 6th, Christopher Morel blasted a long get out the tape measure style home run for his 8th of the year. That made it 5-5, and the Cubs would win this one in the bottom of the 6th on a wild pitch that scores Wilson Contreras. So that was the story there. Really nice stuff from the bullpen that we'll touch on, but all scoreless innings from Hughes, Efros, Martin, and Robertson. Chris Martin, really good this weekend. I think we'll focus on him in particular. David Robertson in this game picking up his 10th save. No walks, no hits, no runs. 1.80 ERA. Jed Hoyer's phone is going to be buzzing, hopefully. Brendan.
Hopefully.
And he's got an 80-grade smile, I just want to say, he David does. Robertson. Yeah.
He really does. Yeah, I'll miss him.
He is one of those guys that I do wish was around in a more competitive cycle. I do like him. I like him a lot.
You can just re-sign him in the offseason. You know?
Yeah, he seems to be enjoying his time here. And he was one of those guys, Brendan, we talked about him and Givens, you know, had given those quotes about particularly wanting to come to Chicago, seeing the work that they had done with relievers and pitchers and stuff like that, and a sparkling 1.80 ERA for David Robertson. So that is going quite well. On Saturday, it was a 3-1 Cubs win. This one started, not the best, kind of like Friday. Alec Mills comes out of this game after just a third of an inning with an injury. So that is not what you want to see. But Mark Leiter Jr. really stepping up, 5 1/3 following Mills. 3 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts for Mark Leiter Jr. A very well-earned win in that column for Leiter Jr. And, these are just those moments, Brendan. Like, he's had, some up and down outings. The Cubs have used him a lot this year, but you have to give props to guys who get in there. I mean, he threw a start, a full start on a day that he maybe thought he might come in relief. So really commendable effort from Mark Leiter Jr. there. The Cubs got their runs in this one on a Nico Hoerner single in the bottom of the second, and then a Narciso Crook sacrifice fly that made it 2-0 in the bottom of the second. The Red Sox would get one in the sixth, and then Patrick Wisdom would add a little insurance in the eighth with an RBI single, 3-1, and that would be all she wrote. 2 scoreless innings, no hits, no walks, no runs from Michael Givens, his 4th hold of the year, his ERA now at 3.45. So he is another one who has trended very much in the right direction. David Robertson would come on once again for his 11th save of the year, an inning and a third of work, just 1 hit, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts. So after Saturday, that sparkling ERA down to 1.72.
Look at that.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Sunday, it was the lone loss in the series for the Cubs. This one would be 4-2. The Red Sox winning this one, a throwing error by Rowan Wick in the top of the 11th. Wick had done a nice job in the 10th to keep the Red Sox scoreless. The Cubs could not score in their portion of the 10th. They do bring in those runs in the 11th, and the Cubs do not respond. So that would be all that she wrote. The runs in this game for the Cubs, a Wilson Contreras single and Patrick Wisdom's 17th home run of the year that traveled 450 feet, Brendan. So very far. And that's it. So, yeah, a bummer of a way to lose on Sunday, Brendan. It really felt like after they tied the game on the Wisdom homer in the eighth that they would be able to kind of pull off a win, and we were going to come on here and talk about a sweep. I mean, do we even know how to talk about that anymore?
No, I forgot what it felt like.
I especially of a team that's playing as well as the Red Sox.
Right.
We would have had to recalibrate how we do things here.
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping for like another 10-game win streak, but not going to happen, Corey.
Yeah. So either way, though, 2-3 from the Red Sox, really nice for this team. And I think especially with the mix of young guys that we're seeing in there, we saw Narciso Crook get in there a good bit this weekend. We saw Nelson Velasquez getting some starts this weekend. Alfonso Rivas, PJ Higgins catching the game on Sunday. It's nice to see a group that has so many guys getting an opportunity and really just getting a look, finally, for most of them, right? Have a really nice series over a team that is 9 games over .500. This was a nice showing from the Cubs this weekend.
It was nice. Hopefully this is kind of the format we see going forward, where you do get looks from Crook, from Velasquez. You do see Ross use Morel in different situations, whether it be in the leadoff spot, center field, or second base. That's kind of what I was hoping for the past 6 weeks here, seeing so many different mix and matchups here. And it took a Jason Hayward injury, unfortunately, for this to happen. But this is the format going forward that I hope we continue to see, Corey.
Yeah, and that's definitely something that, should catch your eye. Morel moving, some days leading off, and then, you get a righty in there, and then Ortega's back at the leadoff spot. We also see Morel playing second base. And, we obviously all knew that he could play multiple positions. We've talked about that a lot, and we've seen him do it for the Cubs at Wrigley Field. But very, interesting and noteworthy to see them doing this with Morel, with the news that Saya is on the way back, right? We had talked before Like, you have to figure out how you're going to find Morrell playing time, because you're not going to stop doing that, because that would be crazy. And it's good to see that, you know, they're preparing for this. It's exciting to have Saya back, but it did sort of raise some questions about, okay, who was going to play in the outfield, who's going to get these opportunities, etc. So interesting to see this weekend Morrell starting to move around. And I think in the game on, it might have been on Friday, he played both. He played second and also a little center. So he's getting ready for whatever the Cubs need him to do.
Yeah, with Morrell, it will be fascinating how Ross does use him. The defensive metrics on his center field defense have not been kind. So outs above average, this is a very small sample. So you have to take caution in interpreting this. But he's in the second percentile. So, you know, among the worst defenders so far in his short little career this season. And then UZR also is not really kind to Morrell. He currently has a negative six UZR per 150 chances. And that just represents he's going through that learning phase. Outfield is not his natural position. He's a natural third baseman. That seems to be his primary position. He does play shortstop, of course, and then second base as well. But I do wonder just how the Cubs think about 2023, whether Morrell is a super utility guy where you can throw around the diamond, or if they want to keep him, and I guess his performance will dictate this, in a more stable spot. If it is in center field, I hope he continues to get those chances to improve defensively, because there might be some hesitancy to give so many at-bats. And if the position only open for Morrell is in center field, then maybe he shouldn't be playing second base this much. And with free agency, there's a lot of free agent shortstops out there. Nico has been the best defensive shortstop in the league this year, but there might be a scenario where it makes sense from a lineup construction standpoint in the Cubs roster, where they do sign a shortstop, you move Nico to second base, who's likely going to be the best defensive second baseman. And that means Morrell kind of has to play the outfield a little bit more. So that's where I'm focused. Once Saya comes back, is Morrell going to get most of his at-bats from second base, or will he continue to get those chances in center field? And I guess the way my mind thinks about this, I kind of prefer him to get those chances from center field, Corey.
Yeah, you know, and especially at Wrigley, too, it's an interesting place to play the outfield, especially with the wind, yeah, the ivy, the alleys, etc. So it does take some time. It is also one of those things, though, like flexibility is always good, right? I know that, you know, some people are already, for whatever reason, starting debates about, you know, why would they even look at a shortstop with Nico and this and this? And it's, you know, you can feel however you want, but flexibility is a good thing. If you want to bring
in... The shortstops, if they, let's say they sign a shortstop, we talked about this a few episodes ago, you know, the shortstops are older than Nico. It's possible in a year or two, they move Nico back to shortstop, they move that shortstop to third base, you know? So flexibility is very
key. DH guys, Nico plays short. It doesn't matter. Right?
It
really doesn't. When you have guys that can be, in Nico's case, elite defenders wherever you put them, you worry about it later. If you need to guarantee a guy a certain position to sign him, that's fine. It's also the benefit of someone like Morrell. You know, how many plate appearances, or how you might view that going forward, a lot of season left. So you're going to learn a lot more about him here in 2022. But the ability for him to play different positions, try different positions, and hopefully improve at the ones that he's not rating as well at, you know, that makes things a lot easier when you're trying to build a roster. It just gives you flexibility. And, you know, you look at what the Cubs did, they're very different players. So I'm only comparing them and, you know, the potential ability to move around. But Ben Zobrist played everywhere for the Cubs, right? And on any given day, he might have been at second, he might have been at third, he might have been in right field, left field, it didn't matter, right? He'd do it, and he'd do it well, and you just, whatever else Joe needed to do on that particular day, all right, we'll put Ben here, because we want this guy at second base today. It doesn't matter.
Yadi Molina to get a strikeout, you know, you go throw
Ben Zobrist.
He can pitch.
Yeah.
He can pitch.
Well, and Morrell would probably, I think Ben Zobrist, when he struck Yadi out, it looked kind of like a changeup, a little bit of changeup, had a little fade on it. I think Morrell would blow one by him. You know, 90.
I think he would have a pretty nasty slider too with that arm angle. Just saying.
I don't want him throwing sliders. Not to sound like you, but I don't want him throwing breaking balls. Anyway, the last thing just from these box scores before we jump into some of these more guys specifically, Keegan Thompson, a short start on Sunday, 4 innings, 7 hits, 2 earned, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. This is another one, Brendan, where the box score doesn't really tell the whole story, right? Yeah. He kind of got killed by some infield singles, mishaps. Infield balls. It was not. He ended up throwing 86 pitches in those 4 innings, only the 2 runs. The 3 walks are a little high, but the outing should have gone smoother and probably deeper into the game had he had a little bit better luck on where some of those batted balls were going around the infield.
Yeah, I agree. If you look at his command that game against the Red Sox, pretty good for the most part. He did walk 3 guys. I get that, but... the cutter was located pretty efficiently, and the misses were competitive misses. It was not as if he was like all over the place. And then the fastball was elevated again. Once again, he's kind of been doing this the past, I think, 5-6 starts now, maybe even more than that, where he's throwing more elevated fastballs, which is great to see. He does have some carry on that pitch, and I enjoyed watching him pitch again. He didn't throw as many sliders this time. He threw 4 sliders, but it's within the range of where he's been throwing that pitch in the past few starts here. So I think it's another positive direction for Keegan, even though the numbers didn't back him up this time.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, similar to how we've talked about him and Steele, especially, it's really just, you know, Luke and I were talking about this with Cody the last time I was in the studio. A lot of it is just the eye test. Right? Mm-hmm. How do they look? Do they look like guys that belong in a rotation, getting out, you know, keeping guys off balance, limiting hard contact, things like that? Like, yeah, this was a short outing, but there was some context there that you need to have. And the general, like, body of work that continues to build, and that's what this is. This is a building experience. It's a building year for these guys. It continues to look good. So I think all, you know, full steam ahead on what we're seeing with Keegan.
Well, that was a good point that you guys brought up when you were in studio, where you don't really know. Like, there's discussions about, all right, you know, can we rely on Keegan and Justin Steele for 2023? But you're talking about players who might be very different come August and September.
Yeah.
And so when you evaluate these single games just within the context of 2023, it's not really a fair evaluation, because you're using these games to hopefully by September have more pitches,
right,
or a different way about going about their business. Then by September, you can evaluate those games in the context of 2023. I thought that was a good point.
And like, especially with Keegan too, it's the easiest to focus on, because, you know, we've talked about, you and our guy Ryan Herrera at allchgo.com have talked about and written about his new slider. And that's something that you have to keep in mind when you're watching. You know, he's integrating a new pitch. So a few months from now, you're going to have all this data on how batters see this pitch, how they react to this pitch, how it works after other pitches and different counts and this and this. And, you know, come spring training next year, you might have, you know, Tommy Hotovy and Breslow and all these guys, they're going to put that all together, and you might be, you know, you might see a completely different guy. Right?
Yeah.
Because you're going to have all of this information and all of these reps and practice that you can then formulate into a new kind of plan. It's just about step at a time.
Step at a time. And like, in my mind, like, Keegan Thompson was not even a starting option, you know, 2 months ago. So to see him do this does change the context. Now, in my mind, like, he seems to be the most likely starting option for 2023. That's how fast these things can change here. But quick break here from our sponsors. One, you guys know, PointsBet, the best way to support CHGO is to download that PointsBet app right now and use code CHGO when you sign up. If you do that, you'll get 2 risk-free bets up to $2,000. But that's not it. If you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you will receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from the CHGO locker, all for making more than a $50 first-time deposit. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet at allchgo.com and we'll help you out. Your home for live in-play betting just got even better. If you see an edge in that game you are watching, is this your favorite team? Prime for a comeback? Don't just watch the game, bet along with it live. More live betting, more live markets, and faster live cash outs. Follow along with your bets the moment they hit and stay in the live action all game long. Download the PointsBet app right now and use promo code CHGO. So what are you waiting for? It's time to elevate your live betting game. Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants to help, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services. Second break here from our sponsor, Owen. I have to tell you about Owen, which stands for only what you need. Owen's 100% plant-based protein shake that gives you nutrition that works as hard as you do. All their products are free of artificial ingredients, allergen-friendly, no gluten or dairy, and easily digestible. I first heard about Owen from Chicago Bears quarterback Justin Fields, who follows a plant-based diet. Some people have compared me to Justin Fields athletically, so I had to try this out. They taste great, and I know I'm getting quality nutrition that I might otherwise miss during my busy day. Owen and CHGO have partnered up to give you an awesome offer. You can get 20% off your first purchase at liveowen.com with code CHGO20. Follow me and Justin Fields and try Owen, only what you need.
All right, so Brendan, I want to talk about the bullpen here, the work that we've seen from the bullpen. It's been, you know, the start of the season, the Cubs bullpen was great, and, you know, they've gone through some ups and downs. Obviously, there's been a rotating cast of pitchers that we've seen in this bullpen, and there was an interesting stat that I saw from Jordan Bastian of MLB.com this morning. That the Cubs lead the majors in relief outings consisting of at least 2 2/3. They've done that 22 times. 3 innings, 18 times, 3 1/3, 12 times, 3 2/3, 10 times, 4, 7 times, 4 1/3, 4 times, 4 2/3, 3 times. So we kind of talked about it this weekend. You know, you see Mark Leiter Jr. coming in for 5 1/3 of relief. You know, we've seen Adrian Sampson have, you know, I think a 4 1/3 outing in relief of Kyle Hendricks that one time. And, you know, even today, Rowan Wick going multiple innings. It just was an interesting stat to kind of give context to. One, we've seen a lot of these Cubs pitchers be asked to kind of try a role that is becoming a lot more popular in Major League Baseball, which is kind of that long specialist that comes in at times. But it's also really highlights the inconsistency, especially at the beginning of the year, of the starting rotation in terms of giving depth and length to these games. And, you know, when you're evaluating a bullpen, this is the type of stuff you have to kind of keep that context of. It's you don't want to make excuses for a bullpen when they're not successful, but it is important to remember, like, this rotation has not often provided deep, long starts, right? There has been a lot asked of this bullpen to get, you know, the 27 outs necessary to play these games.
Yeah, and I remember when Keegan was moved to the rotation, Ross said, even after a few of those struggled starts, like, he kind of missed having Keegan being able to elongate a start and rest that bullpen for subsequent days. So that's the value of having so many options that Ross can go to. If, in this example of Mills, if he goes down, or if a pitcher does struggle out of the gate, you can have someone that can go 4 or 5 innings. To have, you know, Sampson as a possibility, to have, at times, if he is healthy, Alec Mills go more than, you know, 3-4 innings is really valuable. And we saw with Leiter Jr., like, that was an incredibly impressive effort against a really solid offensive team to give the Cubs a win. So to have these options, it does protect the bullpen. And when we look at July, you want to put Robertson in as many possible save chances that teams can look at and try to get a better return in trade. And the same can be said about Givens. You want to get these guys, like, opportunities. You don't want to overuse them. You don't want to put them in scenarios that are not optimal for their skill set, because that could have effects in the trade value you get back in return. So I think overall the bullpen has been maybe a little bit inconsistent in the last month or so. I know Rowan Wick has been frustrating fans. I understand that. I think with Rowan, as the season progresses here. If he continues to do what he does, I'm not really concerned about him. He does not deserve that 5.2 ERA. His command has been rated well above league average. Stuff is being rated well above league average. If you believe in the FIP ERA discrepancy, his FIP is 3.5, his ERA is, or rather his 3.8, his ERA is 5.2. I think as the season goes along, Wick will be fine here. But my main focus is putting Givens, putting Martin, putting Robertson in chances that are best suited for them as they're rested, because we're only 3-4 weeks away from actually seeing these guys potentially moved.
Yeah. So let's talk about Chris Martin for a second. Really nice weekend from Chris, and a really strong comeback. You know, he had some early season struggles, but he definitely looks like the veteran that he has been for several years in this league. Two innings of work on this particular weekend against the Red Sox, four strikeouts, no walks, no runs. I think just one hit in those two innings of work. His numbers on the year, a 3.55 ERA and a 2.92 FIP, which would be one of the best in his career. One of the best in his career outside of just the shortened 2020 season for the Braves in terms of FIP. He just looks really good, Brendan. And this is another one where, like, when we talk in the off seasons about our confidence level in the Cubs being able to put together a bullpen and piece things together and find guys in free agency or waivers or whatever it is that they're finding them. Chris Martin, I don't think it took like a rocket scientist to identify, like, yeah, this guy would be a good guy to add to the bullpen. But just the ability to bring him over, Robertson, Givens, and continue those guys having success, it's a really good trait for this front office to have, not just when the team is competitive. It's obviously useful when the team is competitive, but they're going to have another sort of set of really valuable trade chips, Brendan. Chris Martin has saved games in his career, not too much, but you know, he's gotten a handful of saves in his career. What he might command at the deadline, you never know, but teams are always looking for relief. And when you can have a veteran who's pitched in the World Series, coming over here to the Cubs, putting up really good numbers, in line with some of his career best work, like, that's really solid work by the front office.
Yeah, it's solid work too. And maybe we'll hear more about the changes he made and why he's potentially more effective as a Cub. Despite the ERA being similar to last year, he is getting more whiffs. His strikeout rate, his K per nine, is 10 batters per nine innings right now. Last year was 6.85. The walk rate's exceptional. The walk rate's 1.4 batters per nine innings. And his expected ERA is actually under 3, and his FIP is 3.92. So he's one of the better relievers in the league right now, and definitely in this Cubs bullpen. Now, if you look at maybe some of the changes he has made, his slider has been way more effective this year. The amount of vertical break he's generating with that pitch appears to be quite significantly more from last year by about 5 inches, and his whiff rate has correspondingly gone up by 6 percentage points on that slider. So could be a random thing, who knows, but that does appear to be one of the driving forces for his whiffs and success here with the Cubs. And they have kind of shifted his pitch repertoire away from throwing as many sliders, ironically, there, even though it's more effective. So that might be why he's playing up more. And he's really increased his cutter usage. Last season, he was throwing a cutter 18% of the time, and then this season it's at 28% of the time. So that's quite an increase. And to your point, Chris Martin, you know, probably not on anyone's radars going into the offseason, but this is what the Cubs have been able to do. They've been able to identify pitchers that might fit their mold of changing things around to get them more effective, and you can either keep them or you can use them as trade pieces and get back value that way. So the confidence in the bullpen and developing these guys, no matter the age, it's always going to be there for me, unless the baseball environment drastically changes or something happens with this Cubs infrastructure. But this is something that at this point people should rely on.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of Givens too, he didn't pitch on Sunday but had those two scoreless on Saturday. And he's, you know, again, just another guy who has really settled into having a nice season for himself. His numbers, you know, really in line with where he's been in his career for the last few years. He's got a 3.45 ERA. The 4.33 FIP is a little higher, but again, you know, you look at him throughout his career, 2017 in Baltimore was his best year with a 2.75 ERA and a 3.72 FIP. But outside of that, this is generally where he's sat, you know, somewhere in the 3.5-ish, a little higher, a little lower type ERA and, you know, a FIP around 4.3, 4.5, something like that. So again, you know, the value is there in if you are a team looking for a veteran reliever who, you know, again, also has experience closing games. He saved some games for Baltimore at 11 saves in 2019 and, you know, appears to be healthy and pitching like he has throughout his career. Pick up the phone and call your boy Jed Hoyer. He's got a whole horde of them that he can, you know, dish out. And I am not watching this game, Brendan. And actually, they might be a team that will probably deal with it in house. But I am reading on Twitter right now as we're recording this that Craig Kimbrell left the game for the Dodgers with an apparent injury. Well, so boy, if only you were a team that is out of contention, that has a bunch of relievers who are performing really well and have veteran closer experience. What a nice time it would be for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would fit their goals quite well, Corey. And
yeah.
With Givens, kind of the same thing happened that we saw with Chris Martin. So with Givens, they really changed around his pitch repertoire. And unlike Martin, where he decreased his slider and that became more effective, with Givens, he over doubled his slider usage. So that might be why his K per nine is so high this year. The walk rate has been a little bit high, but he has that unorthodox release point, that unorthodox fastball spin that goes with it. He's a guy. I imagine the Cubs will be able to get something valuable in return. And that with those guys being traded, what I'm like actually really focused on is, can they get immediate value back, or are they going to be in the form of prospects like high A guys and try to keep building that lower level? Because Corey, if they can get back immediate guys, maybe not as immediate as a Craig Kimbrell return, but something like within that sphere, then that also signals this offseason may be different. Some people don't think the Cubs are going to spend. That's, you know, that's a fair assumption perhaps, but they're getting back guys that are ready to go by 2023, then that should change your thinking
right.
Because there's no reason to do that if you're not going to spend this offseason.
Yeah, perhaps target some of those guys and, you know, you add them into continuing to get looks at all of the guys we constantly talk about. I think,
yeah.
You know, it's not what everybody wants to hear. They should be spending all the time. But, you know, Jed, in one of the last times we heard from him, you know, did point out, I think he had a quote about, you know, some things speed the process up, some slow it down, right? And I don't think he's ever going to tell us what those things are and how much they're doing, either the speeding or the slowing. But, you know, you look at guys like Morel, Thompson, Nico playing at the level he's playing at, Steele, et cetera, Hap, right?
Wilson, extension,
the performance of those guys can always, everything is always malleable, right? It can always kind of change the way you're viewing things. And yeah, you brought up Wilson too. Like everybody, you know, has him as sort of a guaranteed to be traded. And I know that's kind of where my expectation is, my hopes and wishes aside, that's just how it seems to be happening. But, you know, there was something to the logic of they brought in they got the DH, they brought in Yan Gomes, they've utilized Contreras in the DH a ton. He was DHing again on Sunday with PJ Hickens behind the dish. And, you know, there was something to the idea of like, okay, well, maybe the front office wanted a look at what does it look like if he's healthy and we keep him fresh and he's able to just focus on hitting and catching when he's catching, but, you know, really let that bat come out to play, right? And I it seems that the trade is where they're looking at this direction. Me, Cody, Luke, Ryan, Brendan, everybody, we talk about this with Contreras relentlessly, right? And we will until they make some sort of decision. But, you know, maybe, Brendan, like, he's got a 906 OPS. This system appears to be working with him staying fresh and being able to DH and having competent quality backups behind him. Maybe that changes the front office's mind and they say, hey, okay, we saw what we needed to see. But it's going back to the larger point, that's what a lot of this is about. And if you are able to use these relievers to acquire closer to major league ready stuff, you have that second half of the season, you see how some of those guys play, and you know, when they get a chance, and maybe that changes how you're viewing things. Last reliever for you before we hit our second ad break, Scott Efros, a really, really solid weekend for Scott Efros. 2 1/3. He allows just one hit, strikes out three in the game on Sunday. He didn't have any strikeouts in the game on Friday, but a clean inning there, no hits, no walks. So all told, it was two and a third inning of work against the Red Sox here, a very good Red Sox team, with just the one hit, no runs, three strikeouts. His ERA on the season, 2.62, Brendan. They appear to have found themselves a piece for their future bullpen.
They have. His slider, Corey, is like unbelievable. First off, his release point is the most extreme release point in Major League Baseball. And then you combine the way he can spin that pitch with that release point, he's the best reliever in this bullpen. To me, it's not even a debate. Now, if you go look at the pitch graders, like the stuff plus, command plus, all of that, right? His stuff plus on his slider is a 70 out of 80. That's two standard deviations better than the league. So better than about 95% of Major League Baseball. And then his sinker, this stuff also plays up at 65. He also has the command on that. And again, that release point, the way he can throw that pitch with that spin, with the angle and everything, it's remarkable. It's really fun to watch. And he's a guy who's going to be controllable for the Cubs for many, many years, and he came out of nowhere. So that's another example of this Cubs infrastructure kind of taking a pitcher, remolding him, taking what he does well, and now all of a sudden the Cubs have a reliever, a high leverage reliever, who's not going to be free agent, Corey, until 2028.
Yeah,
who's not going to be ARB eligible till 2025.
Yeah,
think about all the resources the Cubs have poured in from both trades and from free agency to bolster that back end of the bullpen. You just got one, and you don't have to pay him anything for the most part until two more seasons.
Right.
Corey.
Yeah.
So
2.76 ERA, an 11.3 K per nine, and a 1.74 FIP.
Woo. My God, Corey. My God.
Getting all hot and bothered here talking about Scott Efros. But, you know, it's also something to look for. You know, we talk about Robertson, Gibbons, and Chris Martin, guys that assuredly, barring something crazy, will be traded and hopefully get you back some value. The interesting thing that happens after that is how the bullpen reshuffles, right? So somebody's going to have to start getting saves and pitching, you know, in the ninth. And everybody kind of moves up in terms of their leverage. And David Ross, it's always confusing to talk about these two at the same time. David Ross, when he uses Scott Efros, has used him in high leverage spots and to put out fires and, you know, in certain situations where he's needed to get whiffs. But when you, you know, when you have veterans like the Cubs do, they get, you know, the priority in the pecking order for those big spots, the saves, the big time leverage outings. And when you move those guys, that's going to open up a lot of opportunity for these guys to, you know, kind of take things to that next level. And it's like, okay, here's what you've done at the major league so far. Now let's toss in the highest leverage we can offer and let's really see what we have with some of these guys. And, you know, again, Efros is already kind of doing that in some spots, not the, you know, the saves or anything in the ninth inning. But he's going to be exciting to watch as he continues in the second half of the season to probably get some of those really big key spots for this bullpen.
Yep. Okay. Break here from our sponsor, PointsBet. If you enjoy CHGO, one way to help us continue to grow is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. Not only are you going to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000, but if you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you will receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. If you have any questions, email pointsbet@allcho.com and we'll help you out. And in case you missed it, online signup is available in Illinois. You can actually download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish all from your phone. You'll be signing up with the fastest sports book that's easier than ever, so you can start living your bet life in seconds. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet, live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
All right, Brendan. So switching over to the positional side a little bit, want to give a little love to PJ Higgins.
Yeah.
Just a really only 72 plate appearances on the season for PJ, obviously working in limited time, hasn't been up the entire year. But, you know, getting a bit of an opportunity here, Cubs carrying three catchers, something that we are not unfamiliar with this particular organization doing. And just, you know, putting together a nice little line for himself. Only 1-for-5 in the game on Sunday, but a 302 average, 380 on base, 524 slugging. Good for a 150 WRC+. He's got three homers on the year. He's driven in 11. And he's also, you know, played multiple positions. He's caught.
Yeah, I like that.
He's
yep.
moved to third, you know, which is somewhere he played earlier in his career, you know, coming out of the draft and, you know, starting his minor league career. So he's been flexible for the Cubs. He's played first base as well on times they've needed him. Again, only 72 plate appearances, but it's you always kind of want to just stop and give credit to those guys who
for sure.
Are getting an opportunity, stepping up, and you know taking the opportunity and paying it off for the Cubs. You know, he's been a useful player for them, not just in having that extra catcher and some positional versatility, but he's done really nice at the plate. The game on Friday, 1-for-2, walked two times, scored a run. Like, that's a nice game for a guy that's coming off your bench and, you know, filling that depth role.
Yeah, and even in Iowa, when he's played there in 86 plate appearances, he has batted .417 with a weighted on base average of .473. And he had the walks in the series, as you mentioned there, Corey. Seems to be a patient guy in his career. So 10% walk rate this season, 14% in Iowa. And then dating back to 2019 before COVID hit, and he was injured in 2021. But in 2019, pretty good stat line in Iowa. He had a .291 batting average, 12% walk rate, only 20% strikeout rate, .373 wOBA. So the ability for him to hit while also being flexible enough where he can play third base and first base, that's pretty valuable. I remember Greg Huss talking about PJ Higgins in 2019 about that possible utility as we're seeing today. And that was in the context of a competitive team back then. So I like it. I think with PJ, the catching defense still needs to go through that developmental phase. His ability to block pitches probably needs to improve. He has had some issues recently, and maybe they were more prominent you know, last year before he was injured. But I like the idea. I like the idea of carrying multiple catchers with Wilson on this roster. And you can see that working out pretty well in 2023. Having Wilson, having Yan Gomes, a well-respected veteran, probably is going to manage baseball games, I imagine, in the future. It's interesting. If you watch Yan Gomes in the dugout, he's always right next to either Andy Green or David Ross, always on the railing, always very close to that entry of the dugout. So to have him and Wilson Contreras and PJ Higgins to learn from Wilson and Yan Gomes and a former manager and David Ross, it's possible that catching defense does start to improve. And at least in the early going here, the framing appears to be acceptable. He has an average framing, runs above average. I don't know how that works in a small sample, but the eye test does appear to back that up for me. It's just a matter of him like getting more comfortable blocking pitches and whatnot. So I'm turning into, like, at this point, like 99.9% certain you have to extend Wilson. And I was on the fence going into the year, but seeing Wilson have success, he's DH 24 times now, Corey, 25 including today. That's awesome. And you're seeing like the contact rate go up and the health and the power being sustainable, because we've seen that in years past, but it just hasn't been sustainable for Wilson at the catcher position. So to have PJ Higgins and Yan Gomes and Wilson team up here for like a trio at the catcher position, I don't know what the Wilson asking price is, but the most expensive catching contract is JT Realmuto at $115 million over 5 years. If Wilson wants that, if he wants $115, $120, $130, if you're going to DH him that much, like that's a no-brainer at this point. So it might even make Wilson's asking price like one, like fair, but also very respectable for how the Cubs actually want to use him going forward.
Yeah, I mean, that was the plan when they signed Yan Gomes, and it's working really well. That's kind of going back to our earlier discussion where, you know, maybe that has kind of changed how the front office view things, maybe not. But they had a plan. They talked about it when they signed Yan Gomes and, you know, what their kind of vision was for that and how it would work. And you and I for years really have asked them to get a better backup so that Wilson would not be so run down. I can't remember which year it was, but maybe 2018 or 2019, where he was like a light year ahead of the next person in terms of just pitches caught on the season. Like there was
every single season.
It's so much distance between him and the next guy. And it, you know, just obviously was taking a toll. And so it's, yeah, it does open, your eyes a little bit to, okay, well, we wondered if this would work. And it's not, I wouldn't even say it's working. It's working to such an extreme degree. Like Wilson is having an extraordinary season. We can't talk about how well he's doing enough. Yeah, maybe just do that going forward, right? Like this works. So there you go. Sure. Worth noting, not really to that discussion, but kind of to that discussion in a way. Miguel Amaya actually did get back out in professional baseball this weekend.
There you go.
So he's good been playing on July 1st and July 2nd. And that's just good to see. It's just good to see him out there. He's with the Arizona Summer League Cubs, whatever I know they call it the ACL, but
I know I lose track.
Yeah, whatever they're calling that now. He had a hit in the game that he played on Saturday. So just good to see that he's made his way back. Happy for him that he's been able to get healthy and get back out there. And it's, you know, two games and he's playing in the Arizona Summer League. So not really much we can talk about in terms of how he looks or how he's feeling. That's going to take a minute, but just very good to see him get back out there and be healthy.
Yeah. And then one last note here before we preview the upcoming series with Yan Gomes. One of the like devil's advocate argument here is that his offense has been pretty bad this year. Like he has a WRC plus of 55. You know, that's not good. No way to sugarcoat that. The expected numbers are a little bit better. Expected WOBA over 290, you know, whatever. Still pretty bad. But the thinking there is he's such a good defensive catcher. And the ability to call games right now for him has been on display. And if you can actually get more offense out of Wilson because you're using Yan Gomes, that's huge. Like to have Wilson at like a 330, 350 weight on base average catching all these games doesn't make much sense. But if you can get that 400 weighted on base average while sacrificing some offense in a few games here in Yan Gomes, that's fine. And with PJ Higgins, if you want to have that trifecta catching, you know, PJ Higgins appears to be an interesting bet that might get, you know, more chances. But I bring this up too because Yan Gomes does have another year with the Cubs next season. He has a 2024 club option as well. And maybe, I don't know what the Cubs' plans are with the extension talks or whatever. If they, you know, if they don't feel comfortable, maybe they just trade Wilson regardless. But if he does remain on the roster this year, Corey, and you revisit negotiations in the offseason with Wilson and risk-free agency, you want to see Yan Gomes get more offensive chances as well. We got to see what Yan Gomes can have offensively. That kind of gives you a better idea from the Cubs' perspective, should we give this money to Wilson Contreras? And ditto for PJ Higgins there as well. Yeah. Okay, so let's preview this upcoming series against the Milwaukee Brewers. So Cubs will travel to Milwaukee. They have a 3-game set starting Monday. That first game is a weird start time. I don't understand the start time whatsoever. It's 3:10 p.m. Central, Corey. I don't know what they're doing out there, but that's just a bizarre start time. We have Justin Steele. Oh, 4th of July. That's why they're doing that. Okay, that makes sense. We have Justin Steele on the mound for the Cubs. He's 3-5 with a 4.39 ERA. He'll be facing a Lauer for the Brewers, who is 6-3 with a 4.02 ERA. Tuesday, 7:10 p.m. start time, we have Hendricks on the mound for the Cubs. He's been looking a little bit better recently, so it's good to see. And he's been talking about feeling more comfortable, which is also good to hear. This season, he's 4-6 with a 4.76 ERA. He'll be facing Alexander for Milwaukee, who is 2-0 with a 3.82 ERA. And then on Wednesday, to finish off this 3-game set, we have a Cy Young candidate facing the Cubs for Milwaukee, Corbin Burns, who's 7-4 with a 2.36 ERA. And then Adrian Sampson gets another shot here. No decisions for him on the year. His ERA is 3.38. Got a lot of whiffs against the Red Sox. Got 13 whiffs, actually, against the Red Sox. So kind of get dialed in on that. He has 5 pitch types, uses pretty often. He's kind of like an Alec Mills mold, if that makes sense. So, you know, I guess just if you're interested about Sampson, look for the pitch types. Good command. Definitely in the Alec Mills sphere of pitching. For me, what to look for, Seiya. Hopefully he's back on Monday. Is he going to play every game in the series? Is he ready to play every single day? That is important to me. He's going to be in right field. What do you do with Ortega? Does Ortega get more chances in center field? Who gets sent down? Is it Nelson Velasquez? Is it Crook? Does that mean Morales can be playing second base more? Do we see some weird situations where, yeah, I don't know, you may have like Patrick Wisdom move off third base in the outfield for a game to spell Ian Happ in left field, and that makes Morel available at third base. I don't know. You have David Bode, of course, whose shoulder does not appear to be that bad after that scare and that collision. There's a lot to look at the positional side and how everything gets changed around here. And then, of course, you want to see Kyle Hendricks continue to make those positive improvements.
Yeah, I mean, we're in July now, so this is kind of the you know, the final runway for at least part one of this season and what we're going to see from this organization. So, you know, kind of like it was last year, you know, you kind of have to mentally prep yourself for the weeks ahead. What they're going to do,
oh, I
don't know.
This, man.
So am I. I really am. I
how
totally
many times
am.
Have you said that? You got to mentally prep yourself for the weeks ahead.
This yeah. Is like, well, and it just would be nice to not go into another month where we're like, okay, well, maybe this is this person's last month with the Cubs. Guess I better get to Wrigley Field and enjoy it. You know, like it's just
Wilson.
It's a very depressing way to go about things. It's not great at all. So we'll see what they do. But yeah, you know, the calendar has turned and that's where we are. It's also, as we keep talking about, a very important time for a lot of these pitchers, especially, you know, in the bullpen, to continue pitching well and staying healthy and showcasing themselves, and for whoever else Jed may be receiving phone calls about. This is that kind of final look that teams are going to get. So we are in that, and, you know, it starts with this series. I continue to really look forward to any time Steele or Thompson is pitching, just to continue to watch their development, watch them pitch against different teams, go through different, you know, scenarios, and just see what they can do. So looking forward to Steele on Monday, hoping that Kyle can continue that streak of quality starts, and, you know, we could feel a little more confident that, you know, he's really back and kind of settled into, you know, a little bit more consistency here for that season. And yeah, looking forward to Seiya coming back. It's going to be interesting, as you noted, to see how they kind of maneuver everything around, where everybody's playing, how often Seiya is playing, at least to start here. But that is, there's going to be a lot to pay attention to. There's going to be a lot of roster moving, not just this week, but even going forward. You know, as I was mentioning, you get those reports on guys like Schwindel, Madrigal, et cetera. Stroman's going to come back at some point. Going to be a lot of up and down, a carousel of people showing up to play these games for the Cubs. So going to be a lot to pay attention to. But other than that, don't forget, I think it's on July 5th. We all have to make sure we're prepared to vote for Wilson Contreras in that final round of voting. They change the voting process every year, but I just know we have something to do on July 5th to make sure that Wilson is starting that All-Star game, which he deserves. Every fan base should be unbiasedly voting for Wilson Contreras because he deserves it. And beyond that, I think that's what we have for you. So it's a fun weekend at beautiful, historic Wrigley Field. I know one of the losers for the Red Sox had some, you know, snarky comments about Wrigley Field. He was uninspired, I think called it standard in his experience at Wrigley Field. I didn't really even want to give him the time of day on our airwaves because you guys know just what a laughable take, right? Just miserable. But that's why I'm saying you looked around, you saw the vibes. The weather was perfect in the city of Chicago. Long holiday weekend. There is no place better in the world to spend such an occasion than beautiful, historic Wrigley Field. So we'll leave you with that. Again, hopefully you had a good holiday weekend or having a good holiday weekend or a good regular weekend if you have to work and whatever you're doing. Hope that this podcast finds you well. We will be back with you at the end of the Milwaukee series. Don't forget to tune in to Luke and Cody and Ryan for pre and post throughout this Brewers series. And we will talk to you again soon. So thank you for your support of CHGO and the CHGO Cubs podcast. We'll talk to you guys again soon. And as always, go Cubs.